ॐ सहना भवतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति. May the Supreme Lord protect both the teacher and the student, and may He cherish and nourish us both. May we work with full energy, may our study be perfect, and may it give us good results. May we never feel ill will towards others. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani, Pacharani, Vishesha Shunyari, Vastata, Vishakarani, So yesterday, I threw you in deep water and got you to write an examination answer to a Mudan mission purport. And I was very delighted to see that there were no idiot sheets. Everything made sense. It was wonderful. In fact, three of them were extremely good. And I thought because these groups understood so clearly what the essence of this process is, we get the leader of each group to just come and read them, because in devotional service we have the good fortune that we don't have to go through the process of realization ourselves. We can hear someone who has a realization and learn without the trouble. So I'd like Parvati first to come and read her groups. Please come. Please come here and read yours. Yeah. Can you come here? I'd like it recorded to prosperity, so if you can come here. And read your. If you listen carefully to these, they're very lucid and very good statements. Modern mission of Srila Prabhupada. When Srila Prabhupada went to the West, he kept the purpose of scriptures in his heart. The purpose of the Vedas is to reestablish our lost relationship with Krishna. The process of achieving this in Kali Yuga is by purely chanting the holy names of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada's mission was to spread this mission of Lord Chaitanya by sincerely following the order of his spiritual master, his divine grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The people whom Srila Prabhupada picked up were even lower than those described in Srimad Bhagavatam 333.7, which I didn't copy. He took whatever sparks the candidates had and fanned those sparks without regard for bodies or externals. He saw only the souls who had forgotten their relationship with the Lord and easily took up the chanting of the holy name. The process and the goal, the means and the end, are virtually the same. By inoffensively chanting without being able to understand Vedic scriptures, or even following basic rules and regulations, the Malecha candidates purified their material existence and began engaging in devotional service to the pure devotee to help him expand Lord Chaitanya's mission and falling in love with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada had extreme conviction and faith in Lord Chaitanya, his spiritual master, and the Vedic conclusion. He was very knowledgeable in the scriptures and the adjustments. This is an incomplete sentence. And made adjustments the adjustments made in the scriptures for Kali Yuga. His great compassion and sense of responsibility propelled Krishna consciousness and the divine Vedic literature to every town and village and virtually every home by his travels and by sending his own representatives to preach the message, Harinam, and book distribution. Tushti Devi Dasi, Govinda Devi Dasi, and Parvati Devi Dasi.
Mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada. Mood and mission. In verse 246, Srila Prabhupada's mission is clearly evidenced in his purport. Oh, I thought this was actually, it's not activated.
No, it's just for the
tank. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I have to project more. I'm sorry. In verse 246, Srila Prabhupada's mission is clearly evidenced in his purport. Krishna himself says in the verse that all of the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. Knowing Krishna and one's relationship with him and coming gradually to the perfectional stage of love is essential for all living beings. Srila Prabhupada's mood is one of complete kindness and mercy on all fallen souls. He gives them evidence in the purport, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.33.7, that even the most fallen have surpassed all Vedic rituals by the chanting of the holy name. Prabhupada also gives proof of the super excellence of the simple but sublime process of the chanting of the holy name by citing the pastime of Lord Chaitanya and Prakasananda Saraswati. The Lord, the deliverer of all fallen souls, himself demonstrated the process for this age, the constant and offenseless chanting of the holy name. Srila Prabhupada himself also demonstrated that the propagation of the holy name, the great mantra for deliverance, was the mission of Lord Chaitanya. As a great transcendental personality, Srila Prabhupada taught, demonstrated, and exhibited the process for attaining pure love for Krishna in this fallen age of Kali. A sincere soul, although fallen and incapable of understanding Vedanta, can take instruction from this verse and purport and take to this process of chanting Hare Krishna constantly and offenselessly to attain love of God.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada, out of his great wisdom and compassion, is giving in this purport of Bhagavad Gita 2.46 the sunam bonum, Lord Krishna, as the goal and easiest and best process in this age for attaining him, i.e., chanting Hare Krishna. Prabhupada directs us away from Vedic rituals and demigod worship, which are slow and indirect paths. He says we have no qualification to study or practice Vedanta or study the Upanishads. He clearly states self-realization is attainment of a reawakening of our eternal relationship. And by quoting the Srimad Bhagavatam, he proves shastrically that the process in this age to self-realization is chanting the holy name. He also cites that the Lord himself chanted and set the example of such humility. Srila Prabhupada himself made it his personal mission to fulfill the desire of Mahaprabhu that the holy name be spread to every town and village. Srila Prabhupada's main program was Harinam Sankirtan and Prasadam distribution. His followers are left this legacy to continue, both for their own purification and the purification of the whole world. By following the regulative principles of freedom, the four regulative principles, and chanting 16 rounds daily quota, and taking only Krishna prasadam, one can become situated in goodness and gradually become elevated to transcendence, as anartas are cleared away and offenseless chanting is practiced. Devotees in ISKCON must stay fixed in these basic practices out of love for their spiritual master Srila Prabhupada, and surely they will receive his mercy to continue Lord Chaitanya's mission of bringing everyone to blissful Krishna consciousness through hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. All the Vedas and their purposes can be known through Srila Prabhupada's books and purports, where he constantly directs the conditioned soul back home, back to Godhead, through this sublime method of chanting Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada is qualified to distribute such Vedic knowledge along with any adjustments for preaching according to time, place, and circumstance, because his desires are one with the Lord's, to deliver the fallen souls to their original blissful state and loving devotional service to the Lord.
So by doing this exercise a few times and hearing from the devotees, we can understand quite clearly what mood and mission means and what we're supposed to do. Today is a very auspicious day. It's the appearance day of Advaita Acharya's consort, Sita Devi. We read in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Arjuna Kapotavi that different associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have different roles to play in his mission. So we understand from that work by Bhaktivinoda that both Advaita Acharya's wife, Sita Thakurani, and Srivas Thakur's wife, Malini Devi Dasi, both of them have the role of nourishing the movement. Their role is not front line. their role is to nourish the movement. So I thought to do a workshop centered on this principle of nourishment today within the verses that we'll be doing from chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. So when something a little out of the usual comes along, please don't be bewildered by it. It's in celebration of Siddha Devi's appearance day and in celebration of Vaishnavism and Vaishnavis. Okay, so today's verses 28 to 36, are best studied in two subsections. In verses 28 to 32, Krishna explains that the perfection of Astanga Yoga is to realize the super soul. Verses 33 to 36 deal with the mind and yoga practice. Here, Arjuna analyzes why the Astanga Yoga process is not practical for him. And Krishna gives him an alternative, a more practical process of mind control. So let's have a look at this first section first, verses 28 to 32. Srila Prabhupada gives the key to understanding verse 28 in his word-for-word translation. He tells us that Brahma Sangsparsham means being in constant contact with the Supreme. Here, Supreme refers to Brahman. But as Nectar of Devotion tells us, the happiness achieved through Bhagavat Sparshas, contact with Krishna, and the bhakti process, far exceeds the happiness attained through Brahman realization. In effect, the attempt to attain Brahman is an attempt to negate pain and misery, pain and anxiety. Krishna tells us in 2.14, Matrasvasastakantaya, it's one of our verses, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course, they arise from sense perception, material sense perception. And in 5.22, Krishna says, Yahi samsparsa yabhoga, an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. So the yogis striving for Brahman realization, they have some intelligence. They realize that contact with matter equals pain and misery. They've realized that. And they realize that contact with Brahman will relieve them of that misery and give them some bliss. But unfortunately, they don't realize that Bhagavat Sparshas, contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is what gives Ananda. It's a relationship that comes from contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead that gives Ananda. Not only with Bhagavat doesn't only mean Krishna, but it also means his devotees, it means his process. So contact with any of these things at any level of devotional service, if done without offense, in a favorable way, will give bliss. Unlimited, concentrated, and unparalleled bliss. So let's take a short detour and explore this Bhagavat Sparshas. We've heard in chapter 2 from Krishna that Matra Sparshas, contact with matter, gives distress. Now in chapter 6, he is telling us there is some bliss in contact with Brahman. But let's explore the highest, Bhagavat Sparshas, contact with Bhagavat principle. Can anyone think of examples from Chaitanya Charitamrita or Chaitanya Leela in general where contact with this Bhagavat principle meant bliss, not only bliss, but further realization? No, we're talking actual touch. Yeah. That's very nice. Mahaprabhu showed himself that by contact with the holy name on the tongue and in the heart, this bliss would come. That's a very nice one. Thank you. Yes. Any others? You want to repeat what you said? Any others that we can think of? Yes. animals in Jarakanda first. He would embrace them. They would chant Hari Bol in ecstasy. Isn't it? So also the first meeting of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Nityananda Prabhu in Navadvip. Very amazing. Sanatan Goswami, the embracing of Sanatan Goswami twice, as I remember from Chaitanya Charitamrita. First time he met him and in Puri. What about when he embraced Vasudeva the leper? He embraced seven palm trees. He embraced Advaita Acharya's son who died while they're performing kirtan. He got up and spoke philosophy, consoled his parents, and dropped dead again, moved on. So many times we can see, even a little bit more removed, when Nityananda and Advaita were having pastimes in Shantipur, and Nityananda was called an avadut by Advaita. So he threw some rice, and some of it landed on Advaita, and he became overcome with ecstasy. So we can understand the potency of this Bhagavad Spasa principle. Also when he embraced Ramananda Roy, so many different... And as Leela Madhuri was saying, that Mahaprabhu, not only Mahaprabhu, but many of his Prem Bhakta followers, they would preach simply by embracing people. And some of them were so powerful that they didn't even have to touch the person. They would pass the person. And the air, which make contact with the body of this Prem Bhakta, would then contact another person, and that person would get Prem. It's quite powerful, preaching. There's also a story within recent history of Jagannath Das Babaji. He and a very dear friend, Bhagavatacharya, they met after a very, very long time. And when they embraced... When they embraced, they were so overcome with ecstasy that they entered into trance and they were locked in embrace for many, many hours. Some say 12 hours they were locked in embrace, just both of them absorbed in Krishna Smaranam. And it took Jagannath Das Babaji's servant, Mipindas, it actually took his intervention to break the trance and to unlock the embrace. Quite amazing potency in this Bhagavad Spasa's principle. And then, of course, we have Golok Leela. When we finally make it back home, the first thing that Krishna will do is embrace us. And then he'll faint in ecstasy. One of his dear souls has come back to him. And then the residents of Vrindavan, they will say to us, embrace him, embrace him. Then you will break his fainting fit. Huh? So when we originally go back to Krishna, he will embrace us, faint in the ecstasy of us coming back, and then we will revive him by the same process of embracing him. It's quite amazing. And there, of course, everything is very conscious. So the flowers, which never perish, they don't just sit on the trees. They actually jump off the trees when they see Krishna coming. And they run in front of his feet so that he'll step on them. And then, of course, they never perish, so they get up again and they'll run ahead. And they'll put themselves again and then Krishna will step on them again. And in this way, they obtain the pleasure of contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Also, the rice that Krishna eats is also conscious. Similar way, they fight. Each grain of rice fights. Huh? Who will go in the pot today? Who will feed Krishna today? Like this. So this principle is very, very powerful. Because, I don't know about you, but myself, because I'm very covered, I don't really identify with it so much. I still tend to identify more with the externals, as we were talking the other day with Rukmavati. But we can actually, by these little insights, start to understand that there's a lot more to what Prabhupada has given us than we're understanding at this point in time. So what I'd like to do is a 5-minute workshop to just get a little bit of a taste of this. Some of us have known each other a very long time. We're dear friends. Others of us don't know each other at all. But the point is that we're all devotees. None of us are ordinary personalities. an ordinary personality doesn't attempt to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially in this age of Kali. So what I'd like to do for the next 5 minutes is I'd like us to move amongst each other and hug each other. We're going to have a hug workshop for 5 minutes. So I don't want you hugging each other as friends. I want you hugging each other as devotees. And when you hug each other, I want you to chant the Panchatattva Hare Krishna Maha, the Panchatattva Maha Mantra. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Garada, Srivas, Adi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. And then I want you to go on to the next person. Okay? So we're going to have a 5 minute hug workshop. Let's go for it.
We're in Puri. And we went to Siddhabakul, and my husband, we saw some old Babaji was there, right? We were chanting Haridam. And my husband was up, and he has, like, all, you know, written on his arms, you know. My husband said, oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And they looked at me and said, Gaura.
Since that day, the name Gaura has, like, I mean, that just completely, like, it planted a seed in my heart. So I think whenever I see the TV, I think Gaura. I just hear that vibration. Gaura. I got Gaura Bhaktas.
Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. That's my first thing. He clearly let us know what that name was.
It's so funny. So we now have some practical experience of how blissful Bhagavad's Vashas is, isn't it? Only 5 minutes of it, we're in complete ecstasy. It's also very nourishing. Very nourishing. Okay. So we'll go back to the dry old Astanga Yoga, very elevated path of Astanga Yoga. And we'll go to verse 29. So Krishna explains that this constant contact is not an external or gross thing. It's a matter of consciousness, of transcendental vision. A true yogi sees a super soul within all living entities. And he also sees how all living entities are within the super soul. This is an actual vision he has. It's not a mental adjustment. It's the actual way he sees things. Let's read what Srila Prabhupada has to say about this in a Bhagavad Gita lecture he gave in Los Angeles in 69. Not that everyone is Krishna. Don't make this mistake. Krishna is all-pervading. Why only in this human being? He is there in the atom also. You'll find in the Brahma Samhita, Paramanu means atom. So he is there within atoms also. So why not every living being? You should have that knowledge. So the true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. How in me? Because everything that you see is Krishna. You are sitting on this floor, and so you are sitting on Krishna. You are sitting on this carpet. You are sitting on Krishna. You should know it. How is this carpet Krishna? This carpet is made of Krishna's energy. To see every being, everything, in relation with Krishna, that means you see Krishna everywhere. Krishna is very, very happy when we reciprocate like that. And that's explained in Bhagavatam. He's very pleased by that kind of behavior. That's very nice. Thank you for sharing that. The benefits of such highly evolved Krishna conscious vision are clearly stated by Krishna in verse 30. The one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Srila Prabhupada explains this verse in a way that we can relate to in a lecture he gave in Seattle in 68. I'd like to share what he says with you. It's very illuminating. It's very, very nice. Why Krishna cannot hear your prayer, sincere prayer? How can you say it? Nobody can deny it. So Premanjana Charita Bhakti Velochanena Shantasa Daivajayeshu Veloka Yanti. Just like thousands and thousands of miles away, you can transfer the television picture or your radio sound. Similarly, if you can prepare yourself, then you can always see Govinda. It is not difficult. This is stated in Brahma Samhita. Simply you have to prepare your eyes, your mind, in that way. Here is a television box within your heart. This is the perfection of yoga. It is not that you have to purchase one machine or television set. It is there, and God is also there. You can see, you can hear, you can talk, provided you have got the machine. You repair it, that's all. Repair it. The repairing process is Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, everything is supplied, complete. Complete set of machine you have got within you. And just like for preparing, an expert mechanic is required. Similarly, you require the help of someone expert. Then you'll see that your machine is working. It is not difficult to understand. Nobody can say that it's not possible. In the Shastra, we hear also, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vakya Tinete Kariya Aike. Spiritual realization can be perfected by three parallel processes. Sadhu. Sadhu means saintly persons or realized persons. Sadhu. And Shastra. Shastra means scriptures, authoritative scriptures, Vedic scriptures, Shastra. Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru, spiritual master. Three parallel lines. And if you place your car or vehicle on these three parallel lines, your car will go direct to Krishna. It's very sweet. That's from Seattle in 68. In verse 31, Krishna makes it clear that he and the supersoul are actually one, ekatva. And so when the advanced astanga yogi realizes the supersoul is a localized manifestation of Krishna, he will surrender to him and become his pure, unalloyed devotee engaged in his loving service. In verse 32, Krishna explains that such an advanced yogi can understand very clearly the actual position of the soul in this world of matter. Let's read what Krishna has to say, as well as some of Srila Prabhupada's purport. So here we're looking at verse 32 of chapter 6 and Prabhupada's purport. This is actually very similar to 5.18. There we're talking about the equal vision that is attained by someone who perfects Nishkama Kama Yoga. And here Krishna is saying that the same perfection can be achieved through Astanga Yoga. So Krishna says, he is a perfect yogi who by comparison to his own self sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. Then the Bhaktivedanta Purport from the beginning, one who is Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. The cause of the distress of a living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God. And the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all the activities of the human being, the proprietor of all lands and planets, and the sincerest friend of all living entities. The perfect yogi knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subjected to the threefold material miseries due to forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. And because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world, and he is the dearest servitor of the Lord. The next section is a very interesting section that really shows us once again how very, very kind Krishna is. Inconceivably kind. He's not like most materialists who, if they don't have what they want from the relationship, would then be abusive. He's not at all like that. Even we abuse him, even we turn our back on him, he being the perfection of all of the rasas, is also the perfection of Vatsalya Ras. So he, as a perfect father, as a perfect parent, he just offers full support. Okay, you made a mistake. You're in a mess. This is how you get out of it. He makes all arrangements. Not only does he give instruction, but he actually physically arranges the circumstance for us to become Krishna conscious. This is very, very evident in verses 33 to 36 of this chapter. In verses 33 and 34, Arjuna admits his inability to practice Ashtanga Yoga. Oh, sorry, I've jumped ahead to the end of the Bhagavad Gita and what I just said. I was thinking about something else. We'll read about it tomorrow. This is another point. But this is also nice. In verses 33 and 34, Arjuna admits his inability to practice Ashtanga Yoga, and he explains why. This has very interesting implications for us, as Srila Prabhupada makes clear in his purport to verse 33. Let's take a look at that. I want to start about 10 lines down. As a practical man, Arjuna thought it was impossible to follow this system of yoga, even though he was favorably endowed in many ways. He belonged to the royal family and was highly elevated in terms of numerous qualities. He was a great warrior. He had great longevity. And above all, he was the most intimate friend of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 5,000 years ago, Arjuna had much better facilities than we do now, yet he refused to accept the system of yoga. In fact, we do not find any record in history of his practicing at any time. Therefore, this system must be considered generally impossible in this age of Kali. Of course, it may be possible for some very few rare men, but for the people in general, it is an impossible proposal. Srila Prabhupada further elaborates on this in a lecture he gave, a Bhagavad Gita lecture he gave in New York City. This was in 1966. The mind is so agitated that to cut down the mind is as impossible as you want to stop a hurricane, as we can see from the graphic here on the board. Now you can just imagine Arjuna 5,000 years before, and he was understanding Bhagavad Gita from his Krishna, his friend. Just imagine what is his qualification. He is direct friend of Krishna, and he is a great warrior. He has got administrative capacity, and at the same time his knowledge. Comparing his knowledge, this Bhagavad Gita he understood within 1 hour. But do you think what was impossible for Arjuna 5,000 years before, in such favorable conditions, is now possible for you to discharge? And Arjuna never attempted it, because from the history of Mahabharata, we don't find that Arjuna ever went into meditation of the yoga system. No, never. But still, he was certified by Krishna that you are the only man to understand Bhagavad Gita. You are the only man. Why? Bhaktosi. Because you are my devotee. Priyoshi, you are my very dear friend. So with such a nice certificate and such favorable condition, still he refused. So we can understand from this, as a lesson for us, is that the process is not worth even trying. As we read from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and from Srila Prabhupada, many obstacles are there, and there's all possibility that we won't achieve the goal, even if we are successful in the process. In verse 35, Krishna agrees with Arjuna's conclusions about the difficulties that one faces in Ashtanga Yoga. But he also gives him hope by explaining that it is possible to control the mind by suitable practice and by detachment. Exactly what that suitable practice is explained by Srila Prabhupada in the purport. This is a very powerful purport. I'd like to read quite a lot of it to you. We'll start from the beginning. The difficulty of controlling the obstinate mind, as expressed by Arjuna, is accepted by the personality of Godhead. But at the same time, he suggests that by practice and detachment it is possible. What is that practice? We'll go down about four lines. By the practice of Krishna consciousness, however, one engages in nine types of devotional service to the Lord. The first and foremost of such devotional engagements is hearing about Krishna. This is a very powerful transcendental method for purging the mind of all misgivings. The more one hears about Krishna, the more one becomes enlightened and detached from everything that draws the mind away from Krishna. Very, very powerful sentences here. And about five sentences down, this is practical, because by hearing about Krishna, one becomes automatically attached to the Supreme Person, Supreme Spirit. This attachment is called parasanubhava, spiritual satisfaction. So some time ago we gave the example of the magnet and the iron. If the iron is covered by mud, then it won't be attracted by the field, the magnetic field of the magnet. But if you wash off that mud, there'll be a natural attraction. So our condition is very similar, although we're living sentient beings. We're certainly not a piece of iron. So for us, the same thing. This cetadapana marjana, this cleaning of the heart, cleaning of the dirt, covering the heart. It's just like washing the dirt off of the iron. And then automatically we'll be attracted to Krishna. So as Prabhupada is saying here, a very, very powerful way of cleansing the mind in particular of misgivings, of doubts, and cleaning the heart of the dirt that is there, is to hear about Krishna. Such a very powerful process. I really like the last couple of sentences in this purport. It's Prabhupada's sense of humor and compassion sort of very nicely blended. He says, hearing of the transcendental activities of Lord Krishna is therefore expert treatment for the mad mind, and eating the foodstuff offered to Krishna is the appropriate diet for the suffering patient. This treatment is the process of Krishna consciousness. So we can just hear about Krishna, take prasad, and we'll be out of hospital before we know it. Verse 36 is Krishna's conclusion to this section. He tells us that self-realization is very difficult work if the mind is not under control. However, if we can control the mind and we follow the proper process, our attempts for self-realization to achieve Krishna consciousness will be successful. It almost sounds like a benediction. Just do these things and this will happen. So Srila Prabhupada is keen to help us make the most of this. And he goes to great lengths in his purport that we've just read to make it very clear exactly what we need to do. Now I'm going to ask a couple of you to paraphrase the last purport I read. See how much of it we internalized. Tapasvini. Without looking at the book. Come on. Something? Come on, you know more than that. Okay, great. Thanks. That's okay. No, Thursday, by Thursday everybody's a bit tired. Anybody did listen and does remember? Yeah. Yes, thank you. Anybody have anything to add to that? Okay, great. Thank you. So any questions on what we've read this morning? Or what we've done this morning? Any comments? How many people felt that was relishable? Yeah. They're so blissful just to be in contact with devotees. In fact, as it is explained in Shastra itself, the perfection of touch, it's to touch a devotee. So the illusion is, or has been for some time, that meant someone up there. You know? But everyone in this room is a devotee. And we experience, I experienced great bliss. Huh? Just from 5 minutes of embracing devotees. It's an interesting verse in Ishopanishad that talks about the devotee by studying nisyans and knowledge side by side, we will attain perfection. So it's not just because we're experiencing happiness and distress and therefore we can understand other people's happiness and distress, but because we have some shastric framework to be able to understand what's happening. So when things, especially as we've spent more time in the movement and if we have had a taste for reading Prabhupada's books regularly, then when things happen in our lives or we observe things happening, we immediately put it in a shastric reference. And that gives us actually a lot of ability to actually help ourselves or to help others, because we're seeing the situation in knowledge. Like, an animal will also observe things that are going on around it. It will also observe a storm coming, but it's not going to go inside and close the windows. It will just react. When the storm comes, then it will try and make some adjustment, find itself a place to hide, be peaceful, protected. But for us, because we have some understanding, we start to gain from Prabhupada's books, we start to develop brahminical intelligence, which means that we can penetrate the circumstance and understand what's at the root of it. Or many times we can see a circumstance and we can project by the nature of the circumstance, the mode surrounding it. We can see if this goes a few more steps, it's going to be complete misery for that person. Or it's going to be complete misery for me. And so we will adjust what we're doing. Or we'll suggest to somebody, adjust what you're doing. Like that. So I would think, other devotees may have some insight on this, but I would think that this sentence, one who is Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi, is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. His personal experience is not just external. There's an interaction going on of shastric understanding and the experience. And gradually he's evolving to a point of shastra shakshus, where he sees everything not through the senses and through the mind, but through shastra. Does that make sense? So that's how I would understand, but there may be other comments. Rukmavati. There's no win-win in material existence. But one thing I'd like to say about that, I'm open to your comment on it also, is that I feel one of the greatest disservices that we have done each other within this movement is that for many, many years we put so much stress on service and didn't include within that service reading Prabhupada's books. So people have not had the benefit of being gradually over many years being purified by that process and coming to a platform of knowledge by that process. So if there's a lack of purification, there's a lack of faith. Doubts mean dirt. So we haven't, you know, we haven't been blessed with a balanced situation where it was okay to do 5 hours sankirtan and 3 hours reading. Myself, when I was doing books in Australia, if I came back early, I just got more service. So I found, you know, wherever I was distributing, I'd find where there was a cemetery or a church. And I'd do 5 hours sankirtan, then I'd go and read in the cemetery or the church for 3 hours. Then I'd go home and everybody was blissed that I'd been out all day slogging it, you know. But actually I'd been reading 3 hours at that time, you know, that I was out. You know, I was reading Prabhupada's books. And I feel that I was greatly protected by Prabhupada by doing that. So, you know, when we can understand that these limitations were there, we were young, we didn't really understand what was what and how to do things, and there was a very much a pressure to expand the movement. But Prabhupada did say in the late 70s, now it's time to boil the milk. So it's never too late to boil the milk. You know? So even if it means from now, we understand, okay, I have doubts. Okay, I'm not sure it will work for me. But I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to try and put my full faith in Prabhupada, and I'm going to practically show that by giving time every day to reading his books. Not mechanically, not because I think that's what I should do, but because I realize these books are my sanity. I realize these books are my nourishment. They're my guidance. Like that. And we look for other devotees who are interested. One of the things that was disturbing me when I came here was I'm in a sort of a very different situation here than I am in Mayapur. So I got out of the habit of reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is a major source of inspiration and nourishment for me. And then I met up with another devotee a few days back to also express that I don't know what's happening, but I haven't been in the CC for a long time. So we just decided to get together for an hour at night and read Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's so blissful. So instructive and so blissful. So, you know, like, we can just find ways to start to relate more sensitively to the process Prabhupada is giving. The rah-rah days are finished. They're finished. They went with, you know, the enthusiasm and passion of youth, you know. Now we have to have another look. What's the reality? What am I going to do here? What's my Krishna conscious benefit? You know? Is that okay? Mm-hmm. So we have to. It's so important. This doesn't make you very popular, but I find it makes you very strong in Krishna consciousness in a proper way. Is that if we can somehow or other work on not being pushed around by other people's modes? You know, there's a tendency. When we live in the association of devotees, especially because the movement now is quite canister. It's a very young movement. We haven't really evolved any cultural base, any sensitivity or refinement. And there's a mass of people that are untrained. You know, it's not such a good situation. But if as individuals, we can just decide that, you know, your modes are not going to push me around. I have my standard. I know what I want. I know what my goal is at the end of this life. You see? People may influence you, but they're not going to be a part of where you go at death. They may dominate your whole life, but they're not going to be a part of where you go at death. That's on your head. So if you realize, yes, that's on my head, so then maybe we should be taking on our head now what we do now, that will determine where we go at death. Just a thought. But, you know, like, we so often allow circumstances and people to, you know, the modes to push us around. But, you know, we've been talking a lot about being thoughtful, a lot about the importance of determination in the, in practicing the process like that. Of course. But it would be far more purifying if the two were going side by side. You see, because if you read Nectar of Devotion, you'll be studying Nectar of Devotion soon, then you'll
understand.
Of course it's not lost. No, I'm not suggesting that at all. But I'm saying now we're looking at a different time and a different us. And we have to see, okay, now for further growth, what do I need to do? And in Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami and Prabhupada explain that if we want to come to the Majjhima platform, the two things are required, knowledge and faith. Okay? Knowledge and faith. Not just faith. Knowledge and faith. So they come, both of those will come. Faith basically means further purification. So both of those will come just by reading Prabhupada's books. In proper, you know, mood and everything. Ananda, you wanted to say something? I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Couple of. Yeah. No.
They use faith because it doesn't work.
Well, that I would consider actually bad preaching to say like that. And actually, not so much bad preaching, but immature preaching. I know preaching is bad. But there are a couple of things we can have a look at. One is that as we mature in Krishna consciousness, we realize how incredibly deep and full of implications that simple statement by Prabhupada is. chant and be happy. Now, to chant and be happy, you have to be chanting offenselessly. You have to reach beyond anatta-nivritti. You have to come at least to the platform of nishta. So it's a very simple statement that Prabhupada has given, but the implications of it are very, very deep. So in our own time and way, we have to come to that level of understanding. This is a really deep thing Prabhupada is saying here. I better read Vishwanath Chakvaritakos Madhurya Kadambani and face my anattas and deal with them. Otherwise, I'm not going to chant and be happy. I'm going to chant and be miserable. And I'm going to make other people miserable as well. Because there are a lot of implications in that statement. Many things that Prabhupada says are very, very deep. They're almost like, what do you call it, those Chinese aphorisms, you know, they're sort of like sutras, you know. And something else I was going to say. Oh, the other thing is, I have mentioned this before, but it's an important point from my perspective. Others may like to argue with me. I'm happy to argue on it. The other thing is that because a lot of us come from Christian-type backgrounds or Protestant-type backgrounds, we have some kind of that background in us. And also we have an idea, that an impersonalistic idea, that happiness must mean no distress. Like it's the opposite. Everything, if it's spiritual, it must be the opposite of material. So we discussed this some time ago that, you know, like if you want happiness, unadulterated happiness and perfection and regulation and order in Krishna consciousness, that's fine. That's wonderful. But you're going to Vaikuntha. I don't know if you were here for that class. Maybe you weren't here. But if you want it like that, you're going to Vaikuntha. Because Chaitanya Charamrita and Krishna Leela are Nara Leela. Human. They have a guise of humanness about them. So if you're headed for Golok, then, you know, there's nothing too peaceful about the situation in Golok. Or Gokul, we're talking about first. We've got to go there first. So there, you know, we're going to be harassed by demons. You know, there's this Denikasura demon running after us, you know. Aristasura. So many demons are going to attack. It's not peaceful. Mother Yashoda is always in complete anxiety.
Your happiness comes because you have love. You're
yeah, you're in love with Krishna. Yeah.
There may be distress in other areas.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that the one little thing that I hope to share with you by doing our hug workshop was that we, just by acknowledging each other as devotees and relating to each other as devotees, we can get so much nourishment. Right now, in the movement, just by this simple thing, we can be happy. There may be so many difficulties, managerial difficulties, you know, like legal difficulties, so many difficulties. But if the relationship between the devotees is loving and supportive relationships, that is not sentimental, not based on New Age principles, based on our philosophy, then what is the problem? You know. We can grow, you know, like at the moment, we're not growing naturally. You know, it's like a flower. I pick flowers for Srila Prabhupada in the Samadhi every day and for my Giriraj also. And, you know, you see sometimes if there's too much cold or too much rain, then the flower is distorted. Flower doesn't open naturally and beautifully as it usually does. So same with our situation, there's too much cold, too much harshness between devotees. Then people distort, isn't it? People distort. They can't relate, function as human beings. Doesn't sound like a spiritual movement to me. So all of this is for us to deal with. Not that they made the problem, they make the solution. We're part of the problem, we should become part of the solution. You know, like I would assume that to be a devotee of Krishna, a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, means that we are more integrated and more together as people than the average person. Is that an unfair assumption? You know? I mean, we laugh, but... yeah, this is a nice point. But if you can, I'll just share a little vision I have with you. And I can see that it works also. From some, there are some practical examples of it in the movement already. And it will spread because it's happiness-giving. That is that you can have two kinds of ISKCON that a person enters into. You can have an ISKCON that is destructive and disrupted and basically runs on Kanista principles. There's no systematic, there's nothing systematic happening about it in terms of educational training, in terms of interrelationship, Vaishnava etiquette, anything like that. So when the new person enters, they just add to the madness, basically. Now there's another vision, is that if we work as individuals and as groups of dynamic devotees, we work to establish wherever we are Majjham culture as the operational principle, right? The principles of Majjham culture as the operational principle wherever we are. When a new person comes, they may have their madness, they may have their inadequacies, but they're coming into something that is systematic. They're coming into something that has a bit of shape, and they will fit into that. Instead of coming in and adding to the madness, they'll be coming into something that they can actually shape themselves to. You get the point? It's a completely different thing. So it's not going to happen overnight. We're going to have to be very patient. We're going to have to work very hard. But if we love Srila Prabhupada, we'll do something like this. We'll do something in this way. Whether it be in education, whether it be we're responsible for bhaktins entering the movement, you know, whether we're whatever we are. We have to see what we can do to make things functional in ISKCON. What we've got now externally is not what Prabhupada gave. It's the mess we've made of what Prabhupada gave. So we made the mess, we should clean it up. Actually, that's an interesting point. Anna Lakshatri is saying that when she first joined, it was a small group of devotees, and so the mood was very sweet. And even though I didn't know much, there was a nice family mood there. But then as more and more people joined, things got more and more distorted. So it's a very relevant point given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When he was criticized because he was a very organized, systematic person, he was criticized for being too concerned with structures and too concerned with systems. And he said that this is what gives birth to personalism. This gives birth to personalism. When you have something that is nicely structured, nicely organized, then people know the parameters of what they're dealing with and they can react, they can relate to each other within that. It's true, when we have a small group, it's very easy for everything to be very sweet, very wonderful. But this movement that Mahaprabhu has given into our care is meant to expand to engulf everybody, not only on the planet, but in the universe. That's a big organization. You know? So there we have to look to what Bhaktisiddhanta was saying. And he was talking about Golok principles. You know, the gopis are very, very organized. Vrinda Devi has 1 lakh of parrots and she knows what's happening with them. Lalita Devi takes care of Baladev's gopis and Krishna's gopis. She knows exactly where they are and what's happening. You know, when we're talking, sometimes because of our hippie mentality from before, we think spiritual means disorganized, no need for organization. But spiritual, if you're talking Golok, it's highly organized, extremely highly organized. Where do all those flower beds come from? You know, and it's not just one flower bed a day. Like we change the deity's dress twice a day here. It's constantly happening there. Constantly. Where do all those flowers come from? Mismanagement? There's nothing mismanaged about Golok. So if we want to experience the bliss of Golok here, we should be starting to have a look at these kind of principles. You know, spiritual does mean organized. Spiritual does mean system. When you start studying nectar devotion, which is abhideya, the process of devotional service, you can start to understand that more and more. The more that I take responsibility for my learning and my life, the more Krishna conscious I can be, the more I can give other people. Is that okay? I very much appreciate your point. I think in terms of dealing with the practicalities of what Avadhut Priya is saying, if we look at the situation now, it's not that we can change it en masse overnight, but we have to protect our own Krishna consciousness, and we have to assist in nourishing Prabhupada's mission as much as we can. So there are a number of things that we could do. If we find those circumstances that are very much governed by the lower modes, as you've indicated, if they're very much dominated like that, then it's obviously a place that we're not going to go. So we have to be a little bit enterprising and see if there is a place that we could go and be Krishna conscious and be able to do something productive. Not productive in the sense that you're talking about, but actually productive, both for ourselves and for the other devotees in the mission. Another thing that you can do, it depends, I'm giving a number of alternatives because we have different natures. That's one thing we can do is that we can just find a place that is suitable for our understanding and level of realization. Another thing that we can do is that we can stay away from the politics and the external madness, but develop our own project. Some devotees are doing that within ISKCON, but they're developing their own projects. So this is also a very dynamic way of starting to get things to change. We can do like that. Or we may even decide that I don't feel comfortable depending on ISKCON. I am becoming dysfunctional, and I have doubt that they will support me. I don't see how they could support me, even financially. So what I feel to do is I'm going to go out and get myself a job. But I want to have my home as a preaching center. I'm just giving different kinds of options for different kinds of mentalities and circumstances. So many things that you're like, it's not like all the doors are closed. There is a lot of dysfunctionalism within the movement at the moment. It's the effect of the lower modes, which is the effect of lack of education. We haven't put a strong emphasis on education, especially in the realm of management and social dealings between devotees, these kind of things. It's all there in Bhagavatam. It's all there, even Bhagavad Gita, a lot of it. You know, if you know the modes and how they work, very easily you can understand different people's personalities, because the personalities we're dealing with are pretty much in relation to the modes at this point in time, including our own. You know, so if you know the modes, you know what's happening, how people's minds tick, how they deal with things like that. So, I don't know, maybe other people have other ideas of how we could positively deal with the difficulties that we're facing in the movement at this time. There's an interesting point we can look at here in terms of, this is a big topic, but I'll just touch on it today. Have our expectations of what ISKCON is meant to give us been realistic or illusory? Because we can understand in one sense that the real shelter that Prabhupada is giving us has got nothing to do with the externals. I know that's how I've survived, because I've not expected external support from Prabhupada. We have the process, we have the deities and the Charamrita. I was drinking glasses of it a day at one stage. We have the books, we have the devotees. So all of these have got nothing to do with managerial or external support. You know, we're not talking bricks, we're not talking systems. We're talking the process and what it has to offer. So, you know, I think we also have to look at that. What is it appropriate to expect? You know, what are we expecting? And is that appropriate? I think I'd like to clarify what I'm talking about. I very much appreciate your point. Very much appreciate it. But I'd like to clarify what I mean by do. By what I mean by doing something. That to me, the way I think, is a very broad spectrum of things. And I've said a number of times, let's see what we as individuals can do. Some of us, it may mean that we pray. Some of us, it may mean that we keep our mouth shut and go on with what we're trying to do, Krishna consciously. Some of us, it may mean that we have contacts at GB server level or whatever, wherever we can like get things done organizationally. I'm not suggesting that this doing is only externals. Gorkha Sodas Babaji had only two disciples. But one of those disciples, he had 60,000 disciples of his own. He started how many temples in India? I think it was 60 or 100 temples in India. Amazing preaching. His Guru Maharaj just sat and chanted all day. But the potency of that was his disciple. He manifested the potency of that. So when I say do, I'm not meaning just do physically. There are many levels on which we can do. We can do spiritually, we can do mentally, intellectually, so many different ways. And the doing may even boil down to, for some of us, it may boil down to us just being nice devotees. It may boil down to just not being obnoxious with other devotees. It may boil down to just that. So, what I'm basically, my main thing is that we look at things as responsible individuals within ISKCON. I can't rapport very well with the idea that the problem is there and they should solve it. That to me, I can't relate to that. We had a part to play in our ignorance or our innocence or whatever in making the mess. So in whatever way we can, without becoming more dysfunctional or dysfunctional ourselves, we should start to do that. It's very easy to talk. This gun does that, this is wrong, that's wrong. But okay, let's put our words with our mouth, let's put our action where our mouth is. Do something. That doing, as I say, can be, it may be just that we make our grihastha ashram functional. That would be a great achievement in Kali Yuga. There's so many things that we can do to help ISKCON push on.